All right, everybody, welcome back. Bio Bros, episode 8. This week, we're doing a genus spotlight on Amorphophallus, a pretty cool genus of plants. They're definitely weird, interesting. They kind of do their own thing, play by their own rules a bit. But they're really cool, very underrated plants in cultivation, I believe. And lots of cool uses and all that for them as well. So we'll get right into it with such a history, because you guys know I think that's a bit important. So the oldest records, first time anybody wrote down that they saw these things, was 1692. But the first time we ever heard about actual Amorphophallus and got into a official naming thing was 1934, and then 1976 and 1911. A bunch of nonsense paperwork got done, and we finally got to the official genus Amorphophallus. Now they're from Asia, Africa, a little bit of Australia, lots of the Pacific Islands and that. And quick tip before I pass it over to Alex, not tip, but tidbit here is in the Americas, we here actually have, if you're listening from North or South America, Pontium, which are nearly identical to Amorphophallus in general behavior and stuff, but not related at all. So just a cool thing about convergent evolution. It's kind of neat that they're like very unrelated, like not even close genetically, but they are almost identical. All right, so Alex, start us off with some basics of Amorphophallus.
Well, so depending on where they're from, most Amorphophallus, they go dormant for the cooler months. Especially the temperate species, they go dormant during like the fall and winter. And by dormant, I mean they literally will drop their leaf and just turn into a tuber underground. They absorb all the roots and everything. And they will just sit there in dormancy from some species going up to 6 months, some species a couple of years. And then whenever they decide to not be dormant anymore and like actually start growing, they will, if they're of size, they will throw a flower out, and the flower will then bloom, release pollen, and I say flower, they're actually inflorescence, because Amorphophallus have the largest inflorescence in the world, which would be Amorphophallus titanum, since they are not a true flower. But they have both male and female parts, but they like open at different times. And then after their flower is done, then the flower dies down and melts. Unless they get pollinated, then it will stay and produce berries and stuff like that. But if it doesn't, then it will die down, and then a leaf will come up. Now, they're really a really cool species because they look like trees, but if you look closely, it's just one leaf. They are not a bunch of leaves together. They're just one leaf on the entire stem, but it looks like a tree.
Yeah, it's super cool. Like, the titanum is literally like a 20-foot tall leaf. Not a tree, not multiple leaves, a singular leaf. And so that was why Alex kind of alluded to it a little bit, how they'll drop their leaf, like singular, that wasn't a mispronunciation, and then they'll throw up a flower. So they either have a leaf or a flower for most species. A couple of smaller ones will do both at the same time. They like to break the rules. But in general, it'll just be this monstrous flower and no leaf. Just big, ugly flower sitting there. Ugly by traditional standards. They're really cool looking, but don't advise you to give these to your wife or girlfriend because of another reason here. Amorphophallus, common name, also corpse flower. They smell terrible. They're, depending on the species, it varies a little bit. Some people say they smell like death. Some people they say they smell like penguin poop. It's a bit of a disaster. They're gross, but they look really cool. I advise you give those a Google search. Look up Amorphophallus. And then just look, you'll see a bunch of different species, a bunch of different sizes. Something else I think is really interesting about them that is really underrated when you're talking about them in cultivation is they're a food. They're food. They're grown in parts of Asia, farmed for food. So they grow the plants, and then they wait for them to go dormant, and they harvest the corms or tubers, and then they turn them into food, just like we do with a normal potato. They do over there. One species, I believe, I don't remember which scientific name it really was, but they call it an elephant foot yam, right? A yam is an edible plant. And they'll turn them
that
into
is, noodles. Morphophallus pianifolius. I just knew that one because I actually kept it before.
Yeah, I believe it's miracle noodles or something like that they call them. You'll see them at the store every so often. They keep them in little bags, and they're like kind of clear whitish noodles. They're like in liquid, and they have like no calories in them. They're very, very low calorie food. Those are actually made of Amorphophallus cognac. That's an edible plant entirely. So there's thousands and thousands of people in the world who don't know these as a cool plant to keep in your house or just be interested in. They just know them as food, which is really interesting and not talked about very often at all, as far as like this side of Amorphophallus goes, where we're more into the plant and cultivation. We want to keep them or observe them and learn about them. These people, they just want to eat them, which is interesting. So, you know, look at it through another lens and be like, people who are way into thinking potatoes are really cool.
Yeah, they're just in general a really cool genus. I've kept quite a few different species, the main one being cognac, which is a fairly common species in the cultivation. There's even some different cultivars of it, like I think it's Shattered Glass and Nightstick and things like that, where it's like a little bit of variegation and stuff in them. But I also have, and right now I have four species. I have Cognac, Declinatus, Onksculii, and Perennii, which... The other cool thing about Amorphophallus is that they are so variable in size. It's insane. Like, we were talking about the Titanum can get all the way up to 20 foot tall. Versus the Onksculii, which is the smallest species of Amorphophallus in the world, and they don't even reach a foot. They're a big one would be a foot.
The biggest one ever would be a foot.
Yeah.
I've kept them. The ones Alex has actually came from me. So I've kept them before. I'm anticipating flowers this season, actually, growing. They're maybe 5 inches tall. And then maybe about that as far as the very top goes. They're tiny. They're really, really small. But they still have that characteristic tree look. They're really cool. Like, I love Onksculii. It's probably my favorite species. There's some that are up there, too, of course. Come on. Titanum, you gotta love Titanum. If you don't know what that looks like, look it up. You'll love it too. Even though it smells like death, super cool plant. Yeah, they're tiny, tiny little, and the corms on that one are so small that this is how small they are. I thought I might have accidentally dropped one because I couldn't pick it all the way up, and I was terrified it went down my sink drain.
Yep.
That's the level of small we're talking about here.
They'll fit on your pinky nail.
Oh, yeah. You can fit two of them on there.
Yeah.
And a mature one might be pinky nail sized about. But the fresh ones are very, very small. And then in the research for this episode, I was reading the biggest Titanum tubers are like 330 pounds. So one of them you probably can't pick up on your own, especially because it's a big, awkward thing, and you have to be a strong guy to do so, even at that. And the other one, you're terrified you lost down the sink drain. Same genus. These guys theoretically could be crossed and create a hybrid. I don't think anyone's tried it, or if they have, it hasn't worked for some reason or another. But same genus, and that varied. Super cool.
Yeah, I don't think there's not a ton of crossed Amorphophallus so far. People have mostly been keeping them species specific, I've seen a few, but they're not like a very big hybridized genus right now, which I would like to keep it that way because I think they're
I'm
cool.
A fan of that one.
They're just they're natural. But they just, it's so cool. And Shaw had talked about like different species have different severity of smell. As well, different species have a different length of the smell because species like Amorphophallus cognac, which is one of the ones that I've kept and had blooming size corms, their smell normally lasts between 24 to 48 hours and then it's done. The flower will be there for a while, probably about a week to 2 weeks, but the smell's only there like and really pungent for about a day or two. And some of them don't, like the corpse flower, some of them do not smell that bad or even smell like a rotting corpse. There's ones that smell like rotting cheese or rotting fruit. They always smell like rotting, and that's because their pollinators in the wild are flies. So they want to attract the flies to what the fly thinks is rotting fruit or rotting food or corpse and things to land on them and then fly off to pollinate other ones.
Yeah, they're very interesting plants. I mean, that's how they find them in the wild when they're looking for like mature titanium. A lot of times they find them based off of smell. Their smell can travel for, I don't want to give a number because I don't really know, but very, very far. And you can track them down based on smell. And it's a thing when botanical gardens have them bloom, specifically titanium. Titanium takes forever to be able to get to mature size to bloom, and then it has to be in the right conditions to bloom, and you need a huge facility to care for one of that size. So when botanical gardens get one, or even a lot of private collections, they open up the garden and allow the public to come see it, because it is quite the spectacle. I hope one day I get to see one. And one of my favorite things is watching the videos that they take during the events when the public is allowed in there and watching everybody's faces.
Yep.
Because, like, right when they walk through the door, it just hits them and it's gross. I mean, my opinion, it'd be worth it to see the largest single inflorescence in the world. That'd be super, super cool. It's huge. Like, look it up on Google, I was saying. Really encourage you guys to use the Google on this episode here. It's bigger than these people. There's humans are standing next to a flower, and it's bigger than them. So it's
absolutely insane.
Yeah, they're really interesting plants. And like I was saying about the food thing, too, like people use it as a health food, like a weight loss kind of food. You can eat a lot of it and feel full, but not consume a ton of calories in there. They say it has benefits for like your skin and health. Like they say it's health. Like, so many people in this world don't even think about this as a cool plant. They just think of it as something that is a health food or just general food. And then there's a whole other side of the world of like plants where I want these in my house. Not all of them. They're not my favorite, genus to keep. But they're up there. After everything carnivorous, it probably then goes Amorphophallus. I think they're kind of fun to keep. They look super cool. And we'll get into a bit of like cultivation, like how to keep them, about a couple of good species to start with and all that. Because we've both actually have successfully kept Onyxaculia and have killed cognac. So not to brag, but I'm about an expert on it. So cultivate. Alex, how well have you do cultivation? Because you've actually done it a little better than I have.
So they're not a super common genus in cultivation. So not a ton of people are actually like actively growing these and keeping them and stuff. Especially not the bigger species like Titanium, because those take years and years and years to get to where they're a size where you could get the possibility of seeds from. And it's... you have to have the space to be able to have a 20-foot plant that is also a space that you have control of all the temperatures and things like that as well, because they are a true tropical species and they cannot get into these cold temps. Even some of the temps in like places like Florida and stuff, they would die. And there is ways to like force them into dormancy and things like that, but it has turned into a lot of people have ran into the problems of them getting diseases and stuff like that, because you're stressing the plant massively by forcing it to become dormant when it's not wanting to, because these are plants that don't go dormant for over a year. And then they'll go dormant for years. But
yeah,
or in cultivation,
they'll only go dormant, like animal only goes dormant for a few weeks at a time. So if you have a long winter, all right, great. It went dormant in September and it's October and it's trying to wake up. Now it's even colder. Now what do you do with this thing?
Yeah, it just depends on the species. Some of them are what they would consider temperate. So like cognac is a temperate species, which the cool thing about the temperate species is here in North Carolina, I could grow cognac in my backyard. If I planted it outside, it would come back every year. Because we don't get cold enough to freeze the corms when they're in the ground. But the problem, or not the problem, not a problem, but like the risk you take with that is that if they do end up self-pollinating, which is not super common, but it is possible, they're in a very invasive species. Because the berries, then birds will come in and grab them and take them off, and then you'll have cognacs everywhere.
And like we were saying too, that very pungent smell, it attracts flies. They're really efficient pollinators. They can be miles away, well, the larger species, but they can be far away. And even if there's only two, chances are pretty high that that same fly is going to visit both flowers and pollinate them. The smell makes them very efficient at what they do. There's a reason they put all their eggs in one basket making this flower. It better be good. And it is.
But like, so a bunch of common species that I've seen a lot of people keep are like cognac, pianifolius. I think those are like the two most common species that I've seen. Some people will keep
a good
ones
bit of
like
bulbifer around.
Yeah, bulbifer. I've seen gigas, which gigas is doesn't get quite as large as titanum, but it gets pretty dang close. It also gets up into the teens of footage.
Unxiculata is pretty popular just because it creates offsets so easily that pretty much everybody who's interested in Amorphophallus has one.
Yeah, because you start off with one, and by the end of the one or two seasons, you have 20 or 30.
Yeah. What's the other one? There's a few other ones. Titanium's fairly, it's not terribly rare. You can track it down. It's just not a lot of people have it because it's quite annoying.
I would almost say, common to find, because you can find them in just about any store that sells Amorphophallus, but they are very rarely getting to that size.
Yeah, keeping them is a problem.
Yeah, getting them and having people who have them, because when they produce these berries, it's hundreds and hundreds of berries or seeds that have, then they can just germinate them and turn them into plants. But keeping them alive is the problem, because they get super stressed, they can get diseases fairly easily because they are a true tropical species. You have to keep them wet.
But not when they're dormant. They're dormant.
Not when they're
wet,
dormant.
They'll rot. So that's an issue with the Onxaculi, like we said earlier, the smallest species of Amorphophallus. It's a bit of a problem. When they go dormant, they're very, very small. So when rot takes a hold of them, that fungus or bacteria, whatever is infecting them, spreads really, really quickly, and it takes them out and they die. And so when they're dormant, the care's a little tricky, but not too bad. Think about potatoes, you know, where I live, we don't have basements, but every time I go up to Utah, it always surprises me. People just keep a bucket of potatoes in the basement and they're good. right? Mm-hmm. That nice, cool, dry environment, they're fine. At least in Utah, it's pretty dry. Yeah. And they're just fine. They just stay down there, and sometimes they even start growing. Amorphalus, same concept. Cool and dry, they don't care. As long as you don't, like, cook them and they lose all their water, remember, guys, they're designed to withstand harsh conditions. They're pretty good at it. And you don't rot them or anything by doing that too early, you're all good. Usually I wait for signs of life. They are starting to wake up before I plant mine, or I at least start watering mine. And then I start just caring for them like I would a normal plant. Only other thing I would say with them that's difficult in care while they're growing is they need a lot of energy. So heavy fertilizer, I would fertilize these as heavy as you can safely with whatever fertilizer you're using.
Yeah, I use Osmocote mixed with also fertilizing with liquid dirt. That's just what I use personally, but using a like liquid fertilizer on top of using Osmocote mixed in the soil is a good tactic with them, because they do use so much energy when shooting out a flower, shooting out a new leaf.
Yeah, because like I said, with the efficiency of the flower, they're putting all their eggs in one basket. They're putting all their eggs in one basket with a leaf too. Because remember, they only make one leaf at a time. So They need to make sure this leaf is good. This has to be a good leaf that's going to produce several months worth of energy. Like, they waited for this moment. So I like to feed mine very heavily as well. Big fan of that. But yeah, I guess the only other thing I would say too is like a traditional aeroid mix. They are aeroids, so they have a spathe and spadex. And is get your traditional aeroid mix and then cut like 30% of the chunkiness out of it. So slightly less chunky aeroid mix and then heavy fertilizers. And really, they're pretty tough. Other than that, some species, of course, there's 200 species of these things. Some are going to be picky, but a lot of them are going to be pretty tough, especially if you have like a grow tent or a greenhouse, or you happen to live somewhere that plants grow good in, like Florida. You can grow pretty much all species fairly easily.
Yeah, they're just a really cool genus. And also, I've actually seen people, back to the substrate mix, instead of doing like an aeroid mix, some of these species like Titanum or like the truly, truly tropical that do not want to dry out when they are in leaf or flowering, I've seen people use rock wool. Like, they'll get these little cubes of rock wool, and that'll be the substrate, because it'll hold that moisture in, but not saturate the actual plant to where it'll rot. Also, whenever you, too. Yeah, and whenever your plant's going dormant, a good tactic, at least with like cognac and stuff that I have done, and I know Shaw does it with his Onsaculii, is actually taking them out of the soil and then just storing them in something like a paper bag or something, so that way they stay dry, keep that coolness. That way you don't accidentally water a pot thinking, oh, that looks dry, and then cause your plant to rot.
Yeah, because I've done that exact move. So I, first season, this is my third season now with this Amorphophallus onsaculii. I started out with one tiny, little baby, tiny corm, and then I collected, and then I unpotted it, collected it. I think I got like 10 new baby ones, and my corm had gone from smaller than my pinky nail to like pointer fingernail size. I have normal people sized hands. I don't have the huge monstrous hands or tiny baby hands. So it got way bigger and had a ton of babies. So then I sold off some of those babies, kept like 4 in that mother corm for myself. And then I planted that, and I just, once it went dormant, I just stopped watering it. And I took it all the way out of my tent and put it somewhere where I don't have any other plants, because I didn't want to accidentally water it. And then once growing season was getting closer, I put it in my tent and just didn't water it until I saw some signs of life. And like 3 times I almost watered it And
yeah,
I don't think that would have one watering would have been all that disastrous because I would have realized. And luckily, I live in the desert; things dry just by thinking about it here. But it is like if you're gonna keep them in the same pot and just not unpot them, which bigger species definitely recommend just checking on them at least. Put it somewhere where you don't have any other plants, so that way you kind of forget about it.
Yeah, and a good rule of thumb for potting these, at least from what I've researched and like done myself, is your plant should have enough room to double in size. Because some of these will grow quick. Like on Sekulii, you've only had 3 seasons and it's gone from that little tiny thing to the size of a quarter.
Yeah. And then it's pretty big now. And I had 2 of them that size too.
Yeah.
And I had another mature one after allowing it to grow and like having a full season without being disturbed. I had another big mother quorum in there and like 20 babies. Now, more Onyx sekulii is one of the most prolific of dividing like that, but it's still something you should consider. Like, that is 100% true. They're going to get big.
Yeah, and they do it quick because, like, cognac will go from, I've personally had them go from the size of a baseball to at the end of the season, they were almost the size, or at least the width of a soccer ball.
I've seen pictures of them that have broken pots.
Yeah.
They just got too big, broke pot.
Yeah, it's because they expand and grow so quick. At least certain species do. Not all of them, obviously, but they're absorbing all that energy back when they are going back to the dormancy stage. So they're filling it all back into the corm, and they will grow to a good big size.
Yeah, because if you guys remember on our plants episode, Plants 101, I think is what we titled it, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the differences between corms and tubers and all that stuff. A lot of these are fairly interchangeable, but remember, the corms get totally used up during growing season. There will be, you can totally unpot an Amorphophallus during growing season. There will be no corms in there. So it's going to totally go away, and then it's going to put all the energy that leaf gathered for a few months and build a whole new corm. So that thing's going to grow. It's going to be, even though it's technically not the same as the one you put in there, it's going to be bigger than it was, assuming you grew it properly. And of course, you're going to assume you grew it properly because you're a smart individual and you do your research and you know what you're getting into before you get in stuff. Hopefully.
Yeah, and they're a fairly easy genus to grow. So they're not, it's at least when you're starting with ones like cognac and Onyx sekulii and things like that, they are not a plant that it's like, oh, if I don't do this perfectly right, they'll die. Some of those species, yes, they are, especially like the ones that come from Borneo, which just about any plant that comes from Borneo seems to be picky, but they are a fairly easy plant. Just don't have them in direct sun, have them in indirect or almost shade. They're a shade plant outside, so inside your window, like indirect sunlight, and they should do well. I would recommend if they're about to flower, if it is warm enough out, stick it outside, because you don't want your room for the next day or two to smell like death.
Yeah, that is a real problem. But yeah, they're pretty easy, very forgiving, and their rules aren't all that different than, so, actually, I'll take it back a step. So I don't believe, and I've said this before on the show, I don't believe in beginner versus expert level plants or animals. I believe in how dedicated can you be, how much research you're going to put in, and all that kind of stuff. I think that anything can be for anybody. But what's nice about these is the rules they play by are pretty close to the rules that your normal houseplants play by. So if you've already kept a lot of houseplants, for the most part, it's going to be the same until they go dormant. And then you do a couple little steps, you know, stop watering, take it out of the pot, throw it in your basement or in a paper bag somewhere. And then when it starts growing again, potted up like you normally would. Whereas like carnivorous plants, I would say, are harder to care for because they play by like an entirely different rule set than your normal house plants that most people have kept to. So you kind of have to relearn how to keep plants when you start keeping carnivorous plants. But Amorphophallus, being aeroids, they're fairly similar to most aeroids. If you can keep like monsteras and stuff, you can keep a lot of Amorphophallus. It's not that hard. It's not that different.
Yeah, and they're one of the things that I always have loved about them, especially like cognac. Cognac specifically is a really good one for this. It's like if you have a plant, or it's a plant basically like about 7 to 6 months out of the year, or 8 to 6 months out of the year, you're going to have to take care of it like an aeroid, water it, all that kind of stuff, fertilize, things like that. But then for the next 6 or 5 months or whatever, you don't have to do anything. You'll have taken it out of the pot, put it in a bag, or just left it in the pot and not watered it, and you get a break. You don't have to water it. You don't have to fertilize it. You don't have to do anything while it's dormant other than make sure that it doesn't get wet and rot. It's just a really cool plant that I think is really good for people who don't want to constantly be taking care of plants, and it gives you that nice little break.
Yeah, I'm on the same train. I mean, same thing I say about my turtles, too. Like, it's kind of nice. I have, like, 8 turtles. And in the summer, you got to care for them every day. I got to go out there, got to make sure they're all good. But in the wintertime, they're all bermating. And it's kind of nice. They have a little bit of a break. I check on them every so often. Like, I do my Amorphophallus, check on them every so often. Say, yeah, all right, you guys are alive. Maybe I'll do a tiny bit of water with my Amorphophallus because it is so dry. I'll just spray them off with a touch of water so they don't fully dehydrate. Same thing, turtles. It's going to be hot for a few days. I'll give them a little bit of food, but it's kind of nice. Like, if you had a full collection of them, you know, you had 5 or 6 Amorphophallus, just by the time you're getting overwhelmed by them and getting burned out caring for them every day, they're going to reset. And then you're excited because it grows again.
Yeah. And like we had said earlier, different species will go dormant for different amount of times. Cognacs are really good about, like I said, they're a temperate species, so they tend to all of fall, all of winter, and even parts of spring be dormant, and then they'll come back then once the temperatures are warming up again. But other species, like some of the true tropical species, like Titanum and things like that, they don't go dormant as long. They might go dormant for a couple of weeks. And those, again, Titanum is also a species that I would not recommend as a first one. You'll want to have worked with other Amorphophallus before you get into Titanum.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's goal is Titanum. Everyone who likes Amorphophallus, it's the number one on everyone's list. It's nearly a full rule because it's an awesome plant. But that's kind of one you get into once you're so into plants you've dedicated an entire greenhouse to buying one. Like, that's kind of the level you're at once you get one of those. Even though I almost bought one today, but I decided that probably was not the most responsible choice of me. So I guess we'll put a wrap on that one, because without getting into the real nitty-gritty of individual species, which we will, this is a genus spotlight, not a species spotlight. Comment if there's any specific species you want to go into. So we just hit on a lot of the landmark species that everybody kind of knows about or likes, little fun facts and all that. But overview, Amorphophallus from Asia, Africa, a little bit of Australia. And they throw up one leaf at a time, and it looks like a baby tree, or one flower at a time, and it looks cool. I don't know, it's hard to describe. Cool looking plant. They're also called corpse flowers because they stink, primarily pollinated by flies. Their Titanum, Amorphophallus titanum, is the largest inflorescence in the world, and I believe the largest leaf in the world. Not single leaf, though. It's like a compound leaf, something like that. Don't quote me on that one. That's off the dome. That one I don't always have. I always get those leaf terms confused. But fairly easy to grow in cultivation, and easy enough to grow in cultivation that it's a farmed plant for food in a couple of species of them. Super, super cool plants. Big fans of them. Really unique. Highly recommend looking into them yourself. There's so many species. There's ones you'll think look cool for sure. And comment down below if you made it this far. I don't remember what we said last week. What did we say last week? If you made it as far, what's a comment?
We QT. So this week, do
A. Let's just drop say. Yeah. Drop yeah. An A. Amorphallus.
Amorphallus.
If you made it this far, just because I want to know. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. I want to just know who actually listens this deep into the show. All right. But other than that, follow social medias, join the Discord, all that fun stuff. See you guys next week.
See you guys.